Blog Talk Radio.
Finally, I'm finally free. Finally, I'm finally me. Finally, I'm finally free.
My name is Jamie. I'm your host. Very exciting show today. Today we have documentary filmmaker Melissa Lowry, who did the film Black Girl in Suburbia. She's going to talk to us about that film and this project that is resonating, especially within the Black nerd community, a topic that a lot of us can relate to. Before we get started, I just wanted to make a few announcements here. If you haven't already, make sure to go ahead and check out the BGN store. It's www.bgnstore.tumblr.com. You can get a shirt, you can get a tote bag, we've got hats and tons of accessories there. And all of the monies and proceeds from the BGN store helps fund these podcasts from week to week. So your support is definitely appreciated. Also, make sure to keep blackgirlnerds.com bookmarked on your web browser and keep checking in, because we have some upcoming giveaways that's going to be happening on the website. So stay in tune for that. And there's also some upcoming projects that we're doing with new chat forums. We're actually collaborating with Blurtology. They have a great chat forum that they're going to be setting up and working with several different podcasters, including Black Girl Nerds. So be sure to tune in to blackgirlnerds.com, and you'll see those updates, and also at blackgirlnerds on Twitter, and I'll be sure to send out those tweets to you. Tonight, our co-host is Ashley from Must Love Horror. So, Ashley, thank you for being on the show with me tonight.
Thank you for having me. Hello, everyone.
And, Ashley, why don't you go ahead and, you know, give us your social networking shout-outs, any projects that you're working on, and introduce yourself to the Black Girl Nerds podcast audience.
Sure. I'm Ashley. I'm a writer, mostly a horror academic writer. I'm also a staff member at the Viscera organization, also known as Viscera Film Festival, where we help women in the sci-fi, horror, fantasy, and action film genres get exposure and opportunities. I'm also the co-host of the Women in Horror Month podcast, and my personal webpage is quirksandsplatters.com, where I basically write horror academic essays and other random film essays and insights.
Awesome. Good stuff. All right.
So
and we're going to be doing a podcast in the future with Ashley, which I'm really excited about, where we're going to be talking about horror movies. So be on the lookout for that. Horror stuff. So let me go ahead and introduce you to our guest. Our guest is Melissa Lowry. She is an upcoming filmmaker from Portland, Oregon. She graduated from Pacific University in the fall of 2009 with a BA in media. After graduation, Melissa worked on several short independent film projects, commercials, and a web series around the Portland area. Black Girl in Suburbia is her first feature documentary. Welcome, Melissa, to the show, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on with you guys.
Did I pronounce your last name correctly? Is it Lowry?
It is. Well, think of, like, you know, Bad Boys, Mike Lowry. Think of,
oh my
think
God.
Of Mike Lowry.
I was thinking that when I was saying it in my head. I was like, Mike Lowry. Cool. Okay. Well, Melissa, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and what got you interested in filmmaking?
So I am a wife and mom to two girls, Jayla and Shay. They are, Shay is 9 and Jayla is 11. They keep me on my toes, like crazy. I was born in Portland, Oregon, and I was raised, in Westland, Oregon, which is just a suburb right outside of Portland. I became interested in film. I've always kind of was very interested in media. I went back to school, went back to Pacific, and got my degree in general media and focused on video and film production. And then I just was very drawn to documentaries, just because of the way that you can share a story and give a perspective on a certain experience. So, that's kind of where I started getting really interested in something that I wanted to do. So that's where I kind of started with the film thing and where I came from. So.
And how did the idea for Black Girl in Suburbia come about?
It came about, my oldest daughter came to me, and this was years ago. She was probably about 5 or 6, and she asked me why she was the only brown girl in her class. Hmm. And why she was the only brown girl in her class that didn't speak Spanish. Where we live right now in Oregon, the community we live in has a large Hispanic population. And so she was asking me why she, you know, she couldn't really identify with the white kids, but then also there's kids that are her same complexion, but they speak a whole nother language, and they all kind of look the same, you know. So, and then, you know, asking me about, you know, why her hair wasn't straight and just all of these questions. And that kind of, you know, I had to kind of think back to my own experiences growing up in West Lynn and going through the same things. And just for some reason, it just kind of stuck with me. We talked, and, you know, I talked to her about you know, what it is that she's going through, and I shared with her some of my experiences that I went through when I was her age, and I just, you know, it just, that conversation just sat with me for a few days, and I said, I gotta look into this more, because I had a very, very good friend who was actually, there was only two of us, I think, in our class that graduated, and she was my first friend that I met when I moved to Westland, and she just happened to be another Black girl, so it just worked out. Like, I always say, you know, it's like the C. Lee from Color Purple and her mm-hmm. sister kind of, like, you know, coming, it's like, oh, my God, I see you, you know, so we kind of bonded, you know, very quickly, and we went through, you know, elementary school and middle school and high school together, and we kind of shared this experience, so at least we had each other to kind of go, you know, to kind of go back and say, oh, my gosh, you know, an ignorant comment or just somebody not really understanding what they're saying and who they're talking to, you know, just frustrations and explaining things. But we were able to kind of have these conversations. And so I thought about the conversations that my friend and I had back in school. And then the words Black girl in suburbia just popped in my head. And I was like, oh, well, that's me and that's my daughters. And I gotta look into this more. So that's what kind of sparked this film, what sparked the idea for it. And I also wanted to look into the school system, especially in Oregon, because my daughters have never had a Black teacher. I never had a Black teacher. So that was something I really wanted to, you know, kind of look into. And so, yeah, so it's that kind of just started the ball rolling.
I'm curious as to what you found. I wrote down, you know, policy versus the personal accounts that you've accumulated. You know, what is the culture of, you know, the space that you were able to document? What's it like as far as, you know, being a Black girl in specific schools or social groups or anything that's kind of an institution in these suburban communities? So, like, you know, how much, you know, were you able to gather without giving too much away? You know, I'm not sure.
In regards to the film and in getting information in the film?
Yeah, and, like, you know, would it be found that's pretty fascinating? What's going to really shock people or move people?
Yeah, so what I did was, so some of the things that I wanted to talk about and find out. I wanted to go into the school system. I went into my girls' school, elementary school, and I interviewed some of their teachers about their experience being an educator in Oregon and diversity and the lack of diversity in the school system and with students and with teachers and what that means. And why there are so few teachers of color and in the state. And, you know, it's one of those things. Oregon is like one of the whitest states in the country. So it's not like it's like wherever you live, even though Portland is like the city where you might see more people of color. But even then, you might walk into a store and you might be the only brown person in that store. And then you go outside of those suburbs and it's even less, you know, the people of color get less and less. So, you know, for the education, from the education standpoint, that was kind of a focus of where are the teachers and how important it is for students of color to see administrators and teachers of color. Even for the white students as well, for them to see that, you know, people of color can also be in positions like a teacher and a principal or whatnot. So we talked a lot about that. I interviewed two groups of high school girls, two different groups of high school girls. I really wanted to get their experience and see, kind of compare my experience because I grew up in the 80s. So I know, and times were different then, times are different now. So I kind of wanted to get their experience as far as, you know, what it's like, you know, being the only one in a classroom or the only one walking down the hallway and finding, clinging to any other Black kids that are there, and just to see somebody that looks like you. And they were very open. They were very excited because one girl was like, you know, I honestly thought this was my own story. That I honestly thought I was by myself in feeling like this. And I'm so happy that I know that I'm not. So that was really big. And those girls were great. Like we got to know them really well, and they were just so open. And we talked about hair. We talked about boys and relationships, being at an all white school and, you know, having, you know, trying to go on dates and are white boys going to ask you out, and the Black boys that are there, they're dating the white girls, you know? So we talked a lot about what that means. And what else did we kind of discuss? But it's a lot of it is really just more experiences and coming from personal perspectives. And it, surprisingly, for me, what I've been learning, I'm constantly learning with this project and having conversations with people that you can be, you know, a Black girl in suburbia, and many of our experiences are very similar, like very similar. But then there's a different perspective where I have one woman who I interviewed who her perspective is different than mine. Her outlook on growing up in suburbia is more, she was raised more where color was not an issue, and was not, it wasn't really brought to her attention. So her perspective, so that was something really interesting, and that's something that is in the film as well. There's a few stories like that where the perspective is different. It's not like, it's just the way that people, it's also how you were raised in your household. And one girl who was adopted by white parents, so her perspective is very different than the rest of the girls because she lives in an all-white community and then goes home and is in an all-white family. And so that, you know, these stories they're amazing, and it's they haven't been told, because I researched even before I started to look to see if anybody has, if there were, you know, if there were books or someone, even, you know, someone blogging or anything just about this type of story, and I didn't see anything out there. So, like I said, these girls were really excited to just be able to, you know, talk about it and say, yes, me too, you know.
Nice. And then I have a question, and we have a question from Twitter, so I'll make this a two-part question. My question is, as a documentary filmmaker, what steps did you take to get the project started? And Don Gibson on Twitter asks, what are some good starter docs for people that are just getting into the medium?
So this is my very first feature doc, and I, at the beginning, was feeling very overwhelmed in doing all of this, taking all of this on my own. I just, at first, I was like, what am I doing? I don't think I can do this, but I know I needed to do this. So that's been kind of a process, to say the least, that it's been a lot of learning and a lot of research and a lot of picking who it is that you would like to work with. I think I started with a very small crew because they're, you know, guys that I knew and were on board, and very kind of, I call us kind of a mom and pop shop, because, you know, we're very in tune with what's going on and what it is that we need to get done for this film. I was sent a link to Kickstarter. Have you guys heard of Kickstarter? You guys
heard of
Kickstarter? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I had never heard of it before. And so I went on and I looked at it and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, and I was just looking through all the different kinds of projects that were on there and the funding that they were able to raise and mm-hmm. people just being able to go on and, you know, support different kinds of projects. So we posted our project up there, and we met our goal, which was a little over $10,000, which was, I was shocked because
nice.
I think that was the first time I realized that my story starting in Westland, Oregon, was another woman's story from Atlanta or, you know, if any other part of the country. So that's where we kind of, that's where we were able to get some funding. And then we got a plan together and I started calling all of my resources and people that I wanted to interview. And we just took off from there.
Did you film in other locations besides Oregon, or is it, or you wanted to have that narrow focus?
Yes. Yeah, so we stayed in Oregon to do our interviews. And initially, I did kind of want to focus a lot on Oregon. We do talk about the statistics in Oregon and the percentage of blacks here, which is very, very small. I think it's like 2.5% of blacks that live in Oregon. That's a whole nother documentary, actually. the culture of black people in this state is very different than anywhere else. Here, you know, you might see a black person walking down the street, and instead of just acknowledging them right away and making eye contact and being friendly and saying hi, it's this very awkwardness kind of thing that happens. And then after a few minutes, then finally if someone says hi, you say hi. But, you know, you go anywhere else, you say hi to somebody, it's no big deal. You keep it moving, you know. But yeah, like I said, that's a whole nother movie.
I was actually curious about the interactions between blacks in Oregon from your perspective. I was really curious. I was wondering if it was more of a, you know, oh my God, I see you and you see me, let's get together, or is it kind
right.
of like,
and
I'm used to being the only person. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for me, I get so excited. Like, I've been known to, like, roll the window down and be like, hey, girl, like, you know, waving, like, where are you from? Where are you moving to? But, you know, there's also, it's kind of this, because I think blacks here are so used to working in an environment where they're the only ones, or being at school where there's, you know, one of few or whatever, but and then when you're by yourself and you see another black person, it's kind of like, I'm excited, but I don't know if I'm excited because, you know, what if they're moving in and they might be moving into my territory or whatever the case is. But it's just this very kind of, at first, it's a little awkward, and then it's, okay, I'm cool, you cool, okay, we're going to keep going. But in our neighborhood, we are the only black family in our neighborhood when we first moved there. And Jayla, my oldest, she was just like, mommy, please, can we go find a black family and move them into the house right next to us? Please, let's just go get them and just, let's just stick them in the house. And I'm like, we can't do that, honey. We can't just go get a family off the street. And I said, maybe you should pray about it. You know, go pray about it. You know, maybe we can get a couple families. And a couple years later, I look out my window and we have a playground, kind of like a neighborhood playground. I see all these black children and black girls with beads and braids running around. And I was like, who are you? Where are you guys from? And they're like, oh, we just moved right around the corner. I was like, what? So my, you know, her prayers have been answered, and she's, you know, both of my girls are just really excited. We've got probably about four black families in our neighborhood. And so it's been like fantastic to see like these brown children, not just my brown children, but other brown children, you know, playing with everybody, all the other kids in the neighborhood and playing. And so it's been great.
And then just looking on Twitter, a lot of people are responding to the culture, the black community in Oregon, and they're saying that I've had that experience where I live. Ebony Jones says that I lived in Washington State. That was the only place it seemed other blacks got excited to see one another. So it seems like this is something that's a trend all over the country, not necessarily just in places like Portland, Oregon, but in other states.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and what I think also really resonates with the reason why you were able to get so many funds from Kickstarter, too, is your story isn't, you know, doesn't just touch people that live in suburbia. It also touches people that live in urban areas, because I didn't grow up in suburbia. But I can definitely relate to this kind of story, because I think all of us at some point have had an experience where we was the only black kid either in our classroom or we lived in a community, maybe not necessarily been a suburban one, but we lived in a community where, you know, there was only a few of us. So I think that each of us can relate to at least some aspects of this story without necessarily living in a suburban town.
Right. And I also, you know, I've been getting feedback not just from African-American women, but, you know, Hispanic, Asian, because, you know, they've gone through the same thing as well. Like, it's not just, I mean, the title is Black Girl in Suburbia, but really throughout the film, whether you're a black girl, you're a white girl, you're whatever, there's some aspect that you will be able to relate to, because as we go through, we talk about what those stages of trying to figure out who you are, just, you know, as a person. Are you, you know, you go to school with white kids, you hang out with a group of black kids, but those black kids don't really accept you. And then the white kids, you fit in, but you're not really black to them. And and how that process of trying to, growing up, trying to process, well, God, where do I, you know, I'm bouncing around two worlds, how do I fit in, and that identity kind of thing. And I think that's a universal issue that everybody can kind of relate to. So it's something that, you know, eventually I think it kind of comes full circle, and everyone will have a little piece of this that they can relate to. Even I've had many conversations with white people, like, you know, I hadn't thought about, you know, seeing the trailer and them saying, I hadn't thought about that. I went to school with a black kid, and I never would have thought that they had that experience. It never was on my radar, but of course it wouldn't be, because they weren't going through it, you know. Or I work with someone, and we have one black guy in our office, like, and I wouldn't have never thought of him being feeling isolated or not able to connect. So that's been really eye-opening to people looking at it from a different perspective.
Tell us where you are in the process of your project. Is it near completion, or is there still more research involved?
We are in post-production right now. So we're done with interviews and research, and right now it's just a matter of piecing the film together. I have a base cut, and now I'm just trying to, edit it the way that I need it to be. And we also have an animation element to the film.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, and that technical part of it is just a lot of work, and it's really tedious. And that's going to take a while to do, but once it's all pulled together, it's going to be pretty fantastic. So.
And when the project is complete, are you looking towards film festivals, YouTube?
Yes. That's my goal. My goal is to, once I'm finished, is to submit to as many festivals as I can. And after that, like, what I would love to do is travel with the film to different, like, to universities and colleges and schools, and do a screening and then have a discussion afterwards, because that's kind of my ultimate goal with this film, is for people to walk away talking and just opening up a dialogue, because for a lot of people, talking about stuff like this, like race and culture and identity, is very scary to them. And I never understood why the word race, you know, is so scary, you know.
It's become a bad word recently.
Yeah. And a lot of people just are not, they don't understand. And the other issue, too, is when you talk about race or culture, people, there's a lot of adults that don't understand that race is separate from culture. They're two different things, and you're not taught that growing up either. So that's another part of that race is just your color. That's, it's, you know, your color, and culture is something completely different. And you can be black, but all there's a ton of black folks that are part of different cultures. But you know, if you don't know that, if mm-hmm. you're white and you don't know that, then you're assuming stuff, and you know, so just getting people to just kind of talk and open up and say, you know, well, this is my experience, and then having the other person say, oh, you know, I haven't thought about it that way, and then taking that with them. And so when they go to and have a conversation, their mindset is different, and they might change the way they might say something to somebody, you know? So
right. Right. What kind of response have you received from the people that were actually involved in the project? Have they learned something from being a part of this experience, having to open up and have this kind of discussion and be very honest with their feelings on this topic? Has the experience changed them in some way?
Yeah, you know, like I said, with both of the groups of girls that I interviewed, they were just really happy that they weren't alone in what they were feeling. Just being able to talk about their hair and,
yeah.
Oh my God, are they always touching your hair and asking you why you can't get it wet? And, you know, just having that kind of conversation where they're able to talk about it, where they're with other girls that understand how frustrating, you know, that is, where, you know, or did you get the, you know, one girl, we talked about a little bit about stereotypes and, you know, oh yeah, if I drink, grape Kool-Aid, then it's, oh yeah, of course you like grape Kool-Aid, or, you know, or you like to eat fried chicken, and just, you know, dismissing stereotypes and having to explain all of these things away. So they, you know, it was eye-opening, but I think they felt relief, you know, that they weren't by themselves. But just having the conversation with everybody involved in the film, we had like fantastic conversations that just opened up like all of our minds and to do more. So.
Got a question really quick, a tweet that just came in from Mind of Gabby. She wants to know your opinion about Rachel Gentile from the George Zimmerman trial. What are your thoughts about how a lot of stereotypes have been sort of cultivated from her comments on the stand?
Rachel Gentile, I didn't see what she said on the stand, but with this whole with the Zimmerman case, and I actually got into it a little bit with someone on Facebook yesterday about the fact that Trayvon was racially profiled,
mm-hmm.
And this person saying that, surprisingly saying, of course he wasn't racially profiled. And it's you know, and you're trying to explain, well, why else would Zimmerman follow this boy? What was his motive to follow this boy, and even after being told not to continue to pursue, what else would his motivation have been, you know, except for that?
Right.
And the response that I was getting from this person was just, well, it's, you know, it's not a black thing. It's not a racial thing. And I'm like, and it's conversations like that that get you riled up. But at the same time, it's hard to explain to somebody who says that they're colorblind or they don't see color or they feel that things are better when it comes to race relations. And that's really, to me, is not really realistic, and so it's hard to have these types of conversations with people that way because they don't get it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They see like another side. So yeah, that's been very, very tough.
It kind of goes with, you know, this idea that, you know, anyone who is not white doesn't sort of belong in suburbia. I think it's funny. It's interesting that you're doing this documentary because I feel like there's probably even an overall theme of feeling like they, like you said, like they don't really belong, and that they're stuck between these two worlds. And
right.
You know, again, what Jamie asked about, you know, the learning process with the people that you interviewed. I mean, you know, this. Another idea I'm thinking of is this dialogue of, you know, you making this space your own and you standing firm and saying, I am a black girl in suburbia and this is my experience and my experience is just as valid as anyone else's. And, you know,
right.
my experience, my the culture that I'm coming from, you know, is just as valuable. And it's
right.
sad that, you know, today we still have to deal with the fact that, you know, you see a black person in this wealthy, affluent neighborhood and you don't
mm-hmm.
belong. And I think that's what this trial, again, that those are the kind of feelings that it riled up and the kind of themes that are kind of running through it as well. So
right. And that's kind of, I mean, even in my experience growing, Westland is a middle to upper class suburb. And so I was raised by a single mom and raised my older brother and my younger sister, and she moved us out there from Portland to kind of, because right, it was the 80s, so Portland, the gangs were starting to come into the city, and so she moved us out to West Lynn, and again, there was maybe three black families, including us, that were there at that time. But, I mean, you could, going, you know, if there was, like, talking to some of my friends in high school, when they wanted to say, when they would tell a story, and they would say, oh, I saw this guy, oh, he was black, no offense, Melissa.
I would be like,
why would I be offended? You know, was he
right.
my cousin? Did
right.
you know him? Like, why would that offend me that you saw a black person? You know, well, you know, I don't know, maybe you did, but he was down the street or whatever. So meaning, you know, any black person that they don't know must obviously be related to either myself or, you know, some other another black family in the community. But, you know, it's very, being in that community, you know, you always kind of feel, I mean, and I'm going to speak for myself because I don't want to speak for all black girls in suburbia, and because every experience is different. But for me, it felt like I had the entire black race on my shoulders because
mm-hmm.
many of these kids, many of the community and many of these kids and even their parents, we were the only black people that they knew and interacted with, you know. So that's why a lot of times I would get, oh, but you're not really black. You're not really black, you know. You're not really like the people we saw on TV or like the rappers or like the, you know. And so that's like that kind of pressure. It's a lot of pressure, you know, to have on your shoulders. And I don't know if I put that pressure on myself or if that was something I felt for them. But, you know, like I said, it's one of those things that I'm learning as I'm going through this journey. I'm kind of thinking about my own experiences, like, huh, you know, was that my own doing? And how does that stick with me today? Where even today, if I get on an elevator, I find myself not wanting to be aggressive looking or scary looking. So I put on a smile. You know what I'm saying? I put a smile on.
Mm-hmm.
I get on the elevator and I try not to be threatening. I say hello because I don't want to scare the white people. But at the same time, I'm thinking after I do it, I'm like, what in the world? What am I teasing for? Who I got to smile at? You know, so it's like it's this thing that I think I felt, you know, growing up in that community, it's kind of, you have to, I think one of the girls in the film said it's like putting on your good face, and then when you go home, you can take it off. You're represent, or you're putting on this, like, you know, representative, I guess. So, yeah, so that all, it's very interesting. It's been very interesting.
What kind of response have you received from those who have watched your trailer via your website and YouTube and any other video platforms?
It's been really positive. The majority of responses that I get, again, like I said, have been just women all over, all kinds of women. from all over just saying, thank you so much, and this is me, and this is my story. Like, a lot of, I just get, this is me, and that's it. This is my story. Mm-hmm. And that's all they have to say. And I think those reactions are just to the point where, like I said, this hasn't really been talked about. It hasn't really been something that's been brought up, and this is just one part of the, you know, as an African American, this is just one of the stories that I don't think we've seen. And I think there's just a lot of women that are like, thank God, because, you know, I don't want to, you know, I did get one, I got a response from a African American woman who felt that our experience wasn't really valid, because how could we be upset or feel isolated or have any kind of problems or issues because we grew up in a suburban area? Meaning you had it all, so why are you even complaining? Like, try coming to Chicago, why don't you try to come to my neighborhood in Chicago, and then you can do a documentary.
So there are a lot of working class suburbs I will tell you, coming from a working class suburb, we did not have it all, but that's just me.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, yes, I did grow up in this suburb, this middle to upper class suburb, but I will tell you, my mom had one job. We ate ramen noodles. We didn't live on the top of the hill. We lived at the bottom of the hill. So she was, you know, barely trying to make ends meet. So just the fact that that's just where we lived. That didn't mean that life was easy or that we didn't struggle.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, but I think there's some African Americans that really want us to kind of stay in this kind of box and not, and then that becomes like a that's where that, you know, representing a whole race comes in, and then you kind of lose that, the identity of who you are just as a person, and whether you're black or white, you know. So in general, the responses have been really positive. And, you know, you just get some of those other ones that are just like, why are you so dramatic? Oh, my gosh, really? Give me a break. And, you know, there's other stories we should be seeing. And, but, yeah, so.
Do you feel like the stereotypes that cultivate in our community are more harsher towards black women than black men, or do we receive the same kind of vitriol all around?
I think in every group there's stereotypes, and those stereotypes are not always positive, but they can hurt equally.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think the stereotypes were, talking about, like, an example. Well, I have an older brother. He's 10 years older. When he was in high school in West Glen, this is a difference between his experience and my experience. In his experience, he was not taken seriously in the classroom. He wasn't, for about the first semester of his history class or math class, he didn't have a book. And when it was time to take a test, he failed. And when my mother went in to say, why does my son not have a book? And the teacher said, well, he has one book, but he has to keep it at school. But every other student had a book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a big deal and a big issue. Well, how come he doesn't have a book, and why are you not interested in him performing to the level that I know that he could perform to? So there was issues like that for him where he was not taken seriously in the classroom, but he played sports. So, you play football, and you play baseball, and you play basketball, so you're good there, you know. So that, in that sense of stereotypes for him, for a male, African-American male, for me, it was I feel I wasn't the same in the classroom as well, where I was not taken as seriously in the classroom. But even besides me being black, I am a goofball anyways. So, but I think, you know, I would get the rolling of the head, or I'd get somebody trying to do their finger or trying to roll their eyes and smack their lips and say, Melissa, do it. You know, do that. Do the black girl neck roll or do the black girl finger thing. You know, get this kind of, you know, the stereotype mad black woman kind of face. And I would get those types of things. And so I think stereotypes are harsh all around, but it's a lot of work. And a lot of energy. It takes a lot of work and energy to have those conversations with people who are naive. But if they're naive but willing to get it and listen and understand, then I can have that conversation with that person. But if they're naive and ignorant and are closed-minded, then I can't have that conversation. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it just... I think it just depends.
And in the documentary, what do you ask in the documentary to your subjects, other than just issues of race and growing up black and predominantly white communities? Are there any other subjects that you tackle in your documentary?
We talk a lot about the education system and being in the classroom. We talk a lot about that because I feel like that was a big issue for me as well, being in the classroom. Specifically, we talked about, like, in a history class, for instance, like reading a book like Huck Finn where the N-word is in it. And, you know, what do you... The teacher is there. You have the white teacher, you have the white students, and then you have your two African-American students in there, and you're all reading the same book, and you all read the same word, but then how come everybody's looking at the black kids, and the teacher is calling you out saying, is it okay to say this word, and you don't know what to say because you don't want to feel like, you know, you don't want the spotlight on you just because you're the black kid. And so we talk a lot about, you know, about that, interactions with teachers and the students when it comes to, like, Black History Month. And, you know, in example with my youngest daughter, she, during Black History Month, they talked about, the teacher was talking about African-American leaders, like Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks. And afterwards, all the kids came up to her, and they were like, oh, you're just like them. You're just like them. You look like them.
Right.
And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no. And one of the things that sort of kind of bothered me growing up in the education system is, and I grew up in predominantly white schools, is the lack of material on people of color. You know,
yeah,
I didn't know
right.
about people like Octavia Butler. I didn't know about people like Oscar Micheaux until I actually went to college, and I went to an HBCU. So do you talk about those kind of discussions, that our education system lacks any kind of text on black history, and or it's very little information about black history that's being taught to students of color?
Right. Yeah, one of my things as well is even just educating the teachers themselves, because especially when it comes to race. So if you have a teacher that is not used to being around people of color, or hasn't had any experience in reading up on, you know, African-American leaders or who inventors or whatever, if they don't know any of that stuff, how are they going to be comfortable teaching that to a classroom, whether that, and especially a classroom where there's only two black kids in it? So I think, for me, as I was talking to my daughter's teacher, and I'm just like, how comfortable are you when you talk about that kind of thing? You know, are you, is it comfortable for you? And it's not, you know, it's because she doesn't know. And so I'm my goal, you know, later down the road is to kind of come up with a way to do a training for teachers on race and how to talk to their kids about it in an age-appropriate way. And then, you know, go around to different classrooms and we talk about what race is and we talk about what culture is and we talk about what those two things mean. And my mom made a great point where in talking with this white woman, and she said they were talking about culture, and this woman said, well, you know, white people don't have culture. Mm. And my mom was like, yes, you do. Everybody has, but do you know what that is? And she's like, well, I'm white. And my mom's like, that's the color of your skin. That doesn't have anything to do with culture, you know? And so it just brought up a really interesting point, you know, that if white people don't think they have any kind of culture, then, you know, what does that mean? So everybody needs to be educated and on the same page when, and in talking with our kids too, because if we don't teach them about these things, about race and about culture, and they're just kind of, that should be, I mean, for me, something, a section in social studies or something, because, you know, once they go out into the real world and they're working with all kinds of people, you know, they're not going to know how to interact.
Do you feel like this is do you feel like this is more of a national problem, even in places that are culturally diverse? Like the suburb I grew up in is extremely diverse, but at the same time, at the time, it was still predominantly white, and there was still this barrier where, you know, there was a lack of education, you know, where you were looking at authors of color, you know, whether they were black or Latino or, you know, Chinese or Japanese. So there was definitely that disconnect. Do you feel like this is a wider problem, and have you started taking steps in, you know, your local education system? Have you started doing that as well? You know, like what are your current plans on that?
Well, right now my main priority is to get this film finished. And then once it is finished, I do intend to start like a nonprofit organization and start from here. And, you know, I'm looking at Oregon and teachers here and working on that. But I mean, in talking to you, I could see that being, a problem in other places as well. So, you know, we'll just have to see what goes from there. But I'm very passionate about this, getting teachers more involved in figuring out some kind of way to get a program to kids that addresses race and addresses culture. And so that, you know, when my kid is sitting in her classroom and Martin Luther King speech comes up, not every kid is looking at her. And
right.
She's not feeling, you know, that she's the spotlight. And then the teacher can stop and say, hey, everybody, let's talk about this. Now, why does everybody feel, you know, or Jayla, do you feel uncomfortable right now? Why can somebody hold their hand and ask me why you guys feel like you have to look at Jayla when stuff is coming up? You know, but they're uncomfortable right now. I don't think there's any way that will happen because it's too uncomfortable for the teachers and for administrators and even for some of the students. But if we can figure out how to have those conversations with our kids openly and just talk about it and get it out there, don't be the elephant in the room, you know, they could learn some really great things about each other. So,
do you feel like it does start in the home for the blurred parents that are listening to this podcast? Do you think that we should start, you know, teaching our kids? Because sometimes we can't always depend on our educational system. Obviously, you see these documentaries like Waiting for Superman that is failing students. We can't really depend on them to give our kids the proper education that they need. So do you think it depends on, or we should rely on in the home? and educating our students, either not necessarily homeschooling, but just sort of adding Black history and teaching them things about their culture in addition to what they'll learn every day in the classroom.
Yeah, I do. I do strongly believe that. I mean, your parents in the home is your children's first teacher. So, I'm very big on what's going on at home, and with my family, we talk to our girls very openly about race and about what their experiences and how to handle certain situations. And it's just very different for them because at home, you know, we have a large family. And so at home, they're around people that look like them. But then when they step out into the community, there's nobody there. So we're teaching them to be proud of who they are and be proud of who they are as people, as human beings, and then be proud of who they are as African-American girls. And then when they step outside of that comfort, that family and that home environment, and they step out into the community, there's nobody really there validating that, you know. So it's hard it's hard to keep that pride when you don't see anybody else that looks at you or looks like you, and nobody is confirming, yes, you be proud of who you are, no matter what color you are, no matter, you know, you be proud to be a Black girl. So I hope, you know, in other homes that is the case, that parents are talking openly and having conversations. That's really hard too. You know, there's parents that don't want to have those conversations with their children. So,
right.
But I think, especially right now, especially these days with Trayvon Martin and other cases like his, you have to be open, and you have to have these conversations no matter how difficult it is. I do. One example, my daughter overheard at school someone use the N-word, and she didn't know he was saying that someone had called him that, and he's a Hispanic boy, and she said, well, you know, did they say it or not say it? And he said, well, I don't know. And one of the girl who he said it is one of my daughter's friends. So I asked her mom, or I went and I told her mom, I said, and I don't believe that she's, you know, I don't believe that she said this. And she said, well, you know what, honestly, I don't even know if she knows what that word is. And this is a white family. And she said, but you know what, it's actually a conversation that we should be having. And this is like a good segue to talk about it. And I was like, that's fantastic. You know, I was like, that's great. That's, you know, if this is leading you to talk about race and to talk about what the N-word is, then, you know, so be it. So, you know, that's what I feel we want more of. Now, when those kids get to school, that's where, you know, I would like those teachers in the curriculum to, like, reflect, you know, what they're learning at, or what they're, the pride, what they're learning at home, and being able to be proud of who they are.
Yeah.
Well, we are gearing up towards the end of the podcast. I want to find out, where can we learn more about your project, and where do you go from here? I know you're at the end, you're in post-production, so when can we expect to see Black Girl in Suburbia, and where can we learn more information, and where can our listeners go to help support your efforts in this documentary?
Okay. I'm so excited. Thank you guys so much for having me. First of all, this was really fun. So you can go to blackgirlinsuburbia.com. That's our website. We are on Facebook. You can like. That's where most of the quick updates are to stay in the loop. We're also on Twitter. And I love starting conversations. If this sparked something in you to talk about whatever, then that's the goal there. You can also support, we also have a donate page, so we're still taking donations as well for going into this last phase of the project, and you can find that on our website at blackgirlinsuburbia.com.
blackgirlinsuburbia.com. Well, thank you so much, Melissa, for being on the show. Thank you, Ashley, for helping to steer the ship tonight on the Black Girl Nerds podcast.
Thank
you. Love to have you back again.
Thank you so much.
And thank you guys for listening. I know we're going to cut off in about 30 seconds, but tune in next week. Our podcast is going to be about Black Coders Part 2. So this podcast was actually the most downloaded podcast among all of our shows. So obviously it's a great topic. A lot of you guys were interested in a lot of the information given. So we're going to go ahead and do a Part 2 next week, Sunday, 7 p.m., Black Girl Nerds Podcast. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. Bye. Thanks.